Hi, everyone. I don't have much new to say this week, except to encourage everyone to keep reaching out to friends, neighbors, and community members to offer mutual support. Call or text someone new each day, just to check in. Smile at a stranger. Thank someone in your life. The impact of change has been rapid and is affecting all of us in different ways. We are strongest when we confront challenges and change together. Be kind, be steady, help wherever and whenever you can, and don't be afraid to ask for help if you need it. We will make it through this. Thinking of you all, wherever you are out there, take care. Welcome to Soil Stories with Nick and Leanna. Episode 6, Gelisols and Permafrost-Affected Soils.
Gelisols are permafrost-affected soils of Arctic and subarctic regions and are one of the most interesting but least understood soil orders. The name gelisol is derived from the Latin word for freeze. But gelisols are far from static. They are dynamic soils that respond to physical, chemical, and biological processes that take place in cold environments, and they are at the forefront of global change.
The term permafrost generally refers to permanently frozen ground, but the technical definition is a bit more nuanced.
The permafrost is a ground material, which might be rock, soil, organic matter, or ice, which stays with temperature below freezing point, which is 32 Fahrenheit or 0 degrees Celsius, for at least two consecutive years.
That's Dr. Alexander Holodov. Dr. Holodov goes by Sasha. He's a researcher at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute Permafrost Laboratory. Sasha has been studying permafrost for most of his life and did his graduate work in geology and geocryology at Moscow State University.
So, if we will talk about the entire North Hemisphere, permafrost underlies about 25% of the landmass of Northern Hemisphere.
Permafrost can be any material, rock, ice, or soil, that remains frozen for a minimum of two consecutive years. This is different from seasonally frozen ground that only stays frozen during the winter. In Minnesota, for example, we don't have any soils that remain frozen for the entire year. They always thaw completely. Therefore, although our soils freeze every year and can get very cold in the winter, we have no permafrost. But even in very cold climates that do have permafrost, there's always some surface soil layer that thaws during the growing season. In permafrost terminology, this is called the active layer.
It's a very upper part of the soil, which is seasonally frozen and seasonally unfrozen. During summer, it thaws up to a certain depth, and then and in winter, it frees up again. So we call this layer active layer.
Gelisols are the soil order in U.S. taxonomy, defined as permafrost-affected soils, which have permafrost within 1 to 2 meters of the soil surface. Or put another way, the active layer in these soils is 1 to 2 meters thick. Below that active layer, the gelisols are frozen year-round. In the United States, most gelisols are located in Alaska, where they are of large extent. And Alaska is huge.
Fully 25% of the land mass of the United States.
That's Mark Clark. Mark worked for the USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service, mapping soils in Alaska for over 30 years. Over the course of his career, he dug holes in every corner of the state, from remote Aleutian Islands to the northern coast of the Beaufort Sea. And the knowledge of Alaskan soils in Mark's head is encyclopedic. Although most people from the lower 48 think of Alaska as always cold all the time, there are actually huge variations in climate across the state. Permafrost-affected soils in Alaska are concentrated in two major regions. The first is the northern part of the state, above the Brooks Range. This region is above the Arctic Circle and is dominated by tundra vegetation. Arctic Alaska is often called the zone of continuous permafrost because permafrost underlies nearly the entire land surface.
The zone of continuous permafrost distribution, so North Slope, is mostly climatically driven. Climate is cold enough there to maintain permafrost.
The Arctic, which is more of a climate-driven system, we're looking at, minus 2 to minus 10. degrees centigrade, mean annual temperatures, really cold.
The permafrost in northern Alaska is considered climate-driven. It's just so cold in the continuous permafrost region that permafrost is nearly everywhere, regardless of vegetation, landscape, or soil type. This is in stark contrast to interior Alaska, which makes up the large portion of the state between the Alaska Range in the south, which contains the tallest mountain in North America, Denali, and the Brooks Range in the north. Interior Alaska experiences much warmer subarctic conditions and is dominated not by tundra, but by boreal forest. It's referred to as the zone of discontinuous permafrost because the presence or absence of permafrost in the interior depends largely on ecological factors such as vegetation type, landscape, and soil parent material. Instead of being climate-driven, it is ecologically protected permafrost.
The best way to categorize them is call it Arctic and subarctic. So interior Alaska, boreal forest, subarctic, we have permafrost here that is marginal. It's right at the verge of, you know, it's a 0 to -2 degrees centigrade. This is permafrost that is contingent upon surface conditions in terms of its presence.
And in interior Alaska, actually for last few years, what did we record? It's a mean annual ground temperature at the ground surface in many, many places is above freezing point, but permafrost is still there. And it's caused mostly by the ecological factor.
Ecological factors which play a role in permafrost presence or absence in the interior, or zone of discontinuous permafrost, all have to do with how much radiation reaches the soil surface during the growing season, and the thermal conductivity of the soil. If a soil has high thermal conductivity, it will conduct heat deeper during the growing season and likely have no permafrost near the surface. However, if a soil has low thermal conductivity, permafrost can remain near the surface even during the warmer summer temperatures experienced in the interior. There are three major factors which influence soil thermal properties. The first is the texture of the soil parent material itself, how coarse or fine it is.
As the air temperatures warm in the summer, if the soil gives up its heat very slowly, it's not able to remove all of that frost from the previous winter. And if it's not able to do that when it starts to freeze back in the late fall, then you have this persistence of frost through the summer. And this is why we have permafrost. That coarser textured material of rock fragments and high sand content changes temperature quickly in the summer and the frost goes out of those landscapes. Whereas if, you know, we have lush soils that are silt, they give up their heat very slowly and frost can persist through the summertime.
The second major factor determining the thermal properties of a soil is the thickness of organic materials near the soil surface. Organic materials commonly develop over the top of mineral soil materials in Alaska due to cold, wet, or acidic conditions that limit microbial decomposition. And these organic materials are very effective insulators.
The best way to think about it is to compare it to like fiberglass insulation.
The thicker organic horizon is, the colder temperature, ground temperature you can expect. And it means the colder ground temperature, the shallow active layer. And the best insulator for permafrost is a moderately or well-decomposed peat.
Fire, which is a major ecological disturbance that occurs in the spruce forests of the Alaskan interior, can consume the insulating organic layer and change the thermal regime of a soil entirely.
So when fire comes through, it blackens the surface of this organic mat. It releases bases from the forest from above, warms the soil, and so the organic mat collapses. So if we have coarser textured material, it takes so long to form a thick organic mat that normally within our 300-year recurrence of fire, those soils normally don't have permafrost, or if they do, it's very spotty and very localized. we look at the recurrence of fire, the fire interval that's typical for that area, and we can pretty much predict which soils should have, permafrost within 2 meters of the surface.
The third major factor determining the thermal properties of a soil is snow.
I've always been of the opinion that snow is the most underrated dynamic soil property that we have because it defines our landscapes up here.
When it comes to protecting permafrost, deep snow has the opposite effect of organic materials. Whereas organic materials help to insulate and protect permafrost from melting in the summer, an early deep snow can actually insulate and trap heat in the soil in the winter, preventing cold air from penetrating deeply.
The snow thickness plays a very important role. The thicker snow you have, the better insulator during the winter exists, and it makes ground a little bit warmer.
So if we have 50 centimeters of snow, we're looking at the equivalent of 4 inches of fiberglass insulation on the surface. So snow is the big insulator. It really insulates the ground here in the wintertime. Think of it also from a precipitation perspective. 50% of the precipitation that we get here during the year sits on the surface of snow, and it goes off in the spring within 2 weeks time. So snow is such an important thermal component in these landscapes, and with our changing climates, one of the big variables that we need to understand more about is snow dynamics with changing climates, how it's going to affect the distribution and the amount of snow that we get in the winter, and because it helps determine whether or not we may have permafrost in interior Alaska. Well, if we start adding more snow in the winter to these landscapes, it's going to further insulate the ground and prevent that frost from, re-encroaching during the wintertime. So if we get more snowfall in interior Alaska, conceivably we could lose permafrost because of the increase in insulating effects. And we've seen an increase in snowfall over the last decades in interior and increase in precipitation in general. And so that in itself may be contributing to the loss of permafrost in interior.
While changes in fire frequency or snowfall can result in changes to permafrost, long-term climatic warming also has a huge effect. Sasha and his colleagues at the UAF Permafrost Laboratory have a network of temperature sensors in deep boreholes in permafrost across Alaska, and the data are showing them very clear trends.
We drill bore our own boreholes or use some boreholes that have been drilled for different purposes, and install deeper sensors, and the deeper we go, the less seasonal variation we have. And at a certain depth, we call depth of zero seasonal amplitude, we do not see seasonal. The temperature doesn't change from summer to winter anymore, and changes at that depth reflects only sustainable long-term trends of temperature. And usually the reference depth we use is about 20 meters. We observe increasing of ground temperature at all of sites, at all of our monitoring sites. And as I told, the average trend of ground temperature is increasing is about 0.1 degrees Celsius per year.
If we look at interior Alaska, for instance, we found out that in the wintertime, our temperatures have gone up by 7 to 8 degrees Fahrenheit on average since the beginning of the industrial era. And so this is really, really significant, especially when our average annual temperatures are, around -2 degrees or, 0 to -2 degrees centigrade. So so we've seen a pretty dramatic change in temperatures. Now, how does that affect the permafrost that's there? Well, a good way to look at it is that, you know, we've had this warming in this landscape, and we're right near the melting point anyway of permafrost. And so we've seen areas like out in Western Alaska in recent years with this warming temperatures where we have all the characteristics of a soil that has permafrost. We have a thick organic mat. We have these features in the soil that suggest the soils were wet. We have these redox amorphic features, which suggest that the soils were wet. And then we have evidence that we had permafrost. We have this cryogenic structure in the soil, but we don't have permafrost. We don't have saturated conditions. We still have the organic mat, but we don't have permafrost anymore. So we've seen in these areas of sensitive permafrost, these ones with thermal conductivity properties that are borderline to thawing at any point, where we've actually lost the permafrost.
So your first question might be, why should anyone care?
Need a stable landscape to have stable human activities. And so we have to decide how we're going to manage that landscape. So if there's permafrost under it, if we're in interior Alaska, you know, if we build roads on it, we have to understand what the temperature, the impacts we're going to have of putting a road on the temperature of these soils, and whether or not the permafrost is going to start to melt, and whether the landscape, the road itself is going to fail. Same with houses, everything, agriculture. So to understand not only where permafrost is, but the nature of that permafrost, how much ice it contains, what temperature is it?
In addition to local questions of land use planning and infrastructure, permafrost plays a regional role in the water cycle. Because permafrost is a water impermeable layer, water is held much closer to the surface than it would otherwise be, which is critical for forest growth in areas like interior Alaska that actually get comparatively little precipitation. Finally, permafrost contains large stores of organic matter like food in a freezer. If the permafrost thaws, that organic matter has the potential to be released as methane or carbon dioxide, further exacerbating global change. So far from being static entities, permafrost-affected soils are dynamic and are constantly changing in response to ecological and climatic conditions. The biggest question is how these changes will impact infrastructure, commerce, ecosystem function, and the global carbon cycle. Understanding gelisols, permafrost, and permafrost change is globally important and an issue that touches all of our lives. For all of these reasons, understanding and mapping gelisols is a critical undertaking as we march onward into the 21st century.
Until next time, you guys, be well,
be safe,
and be smart.